The first electric vehicle was actually established in 1884.
In racing, you see a lot of technology being developed.
There's a shortage of chargers.
So the manufacturers are inside the championship developing technologies that they will see being implemented.
If we encourage homeowners to open up their charging station, we strongly believe that we can make a difference, being the catalyst for more EV and solar adoption in this country.
Welcome to the Be Curious podcast, the podcast that champions solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. I'm your host, Louise Houghton, and in each episode, we get curious about a different subject, from the food we eat and the clothes we wear to overflowing landfills and ocean plastic. All of our guests have brilliant minds and innovative ideas that allow us to lead a more sustainable, conscious, and pollutant-free life. And the best part is, this podcast isn't just about listening. It's about building a community and connecting like-minded individuals who are curious about alternatives to enhance their lives and the longevity of the planet. And if you're curious already and you want to find out more about the many sustainable products and services gifted to you from many of our guests on the show, then just head over to our Instagram for more information. You can find out how to enter at becurious_podcast. Today, we're getting curious about electric mobility. We see electric cars on the road all the time now, and there are charging stations in many a parking lot. But if you're into cars, you'll know that there are limitations being placed on internal combustion engines, and the future is electric. But what are the reservations about going electric, and how do you charge your car on the go when you're not close to home? Well, to talk more on this and offer a solution is the co-founder and CEO of EV Charge Me, Sam Saeed. Sam, thanks so much for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure being here. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Of course. I'm really excited to dive into this subject because everybody has to get around in some way or another. And we're also going to talk to the former Formula E champion, Lucas Degrassi, as well. He wants to contribute to the conversation in just a bit. Before we get to that, though, I'd love to just start by getting an overview of what EV Charge Me actually does.
Sure. EV Charge Me is a peer-to-peer EV charging network. So essentially, think of us as the Airbnb of EV charging.
I'm so excited to dive into that. I think it's an amazing solution. And I know that fear of charging is actually a big driver for people not kind of getting on board with the electric cars. So there's so much to unpack with all of that. But first of all, like the technology of electric cars, when did that even first come about and come to the roads?
You might be surprised to hear that the first electric vehicle was actually established by Thomas Parker in 1884.
18?
In England, yes.
That's over 100 years ago.
That's right, 140 years ago, and he drove the car around. So it was a functional electric car.
And do we have any kind of idea as to why that idea didn't stick at the time?
I think the ease of internal combustion engines and the T model Ford, and you know, we've been driving these internal combustion engine cars for the last 100 years now. So
what was the progress then between that first car that was seen by a Brit, I believe he was,
that's
too, right?
Yeah.
Go Brits.
Yeah.
What would you say that the journey of electric mobility has been from that point back in 18 or 1900s to today?
I think really we've seen tremendous growth in the last 10 years. So 10 years ago, we had less than 1% of new vehicles being manufactured being electric. And now that number's risen up to 18%. So I think we're starting to see more of an adoption in the market. But like you quite rightly said, range or charging anxiety still seems to be the main point, the main sticking point for someone choosing to buy an electric vehicle.
But why do you think that they're so important in this day and age?
Electric vehicles?
Yeah.
I mean, they're cheaper, there's less parts. So in a manufacturing standpoint, it's cheaper to make. The electric cars have got a lot cheaper in the last 10 years, and I think they're going to continue getting cheaper. And they're cheaper to maintain. There's no oil changes. It's just the body of the cars, brakes, wheels, and far less components.
And even if you need a new battery in hopefully like 15 years' time, I suppose you're just replacing the battery and the chassis of the car could stay the same.
Yes. That's right.
And I'm hearing as well that on a lot of these electric cars that are being produced, they're actually using more sustainable materials too. So it's not just about reducing carbon emissions when it comes to fuel. It's about like trying to be sustainable all over and actually environmentally friendly and have a good impact with actually the entire chassis of the car.
Yeah, and also cheaper to run. So in one of the biggest coal producing states, West Virginia, which is very much run on coal on their power grid, running an electric vehicle still produces 30% less fossil fuels and carbon dioxide.
And air pollution is a huge contributor as well, too. And I know that's been a huge driving force to moving into electric mobility.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you cast your mind back from 2020 during the COVID pandemic and people were forced to work from home, there was far less cars out there. And we noticed immediately wildlife come back and less pollution in the atmosphere. And
you could see it in LA because, I mean, I like to hike and you could see that there just wasn't that layer of smog over the city.
Right.
Your lungs felt cleaner, everything. It was awful.
And what makes it super exciting is we've gone a long way since 2010. I mean, battery prices are 90% cheaper than they were in 2010. And solar, which I might talk about a little bit later because it all links into what EV Charge Me are doing, solar panels are down about 85%. So it's becoming affordable for consumers to purchase electronic vehicles and solar more than ever.
That's great, because I think that there's been another huge factor in not going electric is cost, because so many things when you want to go green is actually more expensive.
Yeah.
And so what about oil and gas mining as well? Of course, that's really detrimental to our environment.
Yeah, and I think people, it's easy for us to drive to a gas station and fill our car with gas, but that gas needs to be mined. It's crude oil that comes from the ground, and we've seen catastrophes around the world, and recently the BP crisis off the Gulf of Mexico, and there's been explosions here and there. We have to extract that oil, then we need to refine that oil, which is a lot of burning, and then that oil then gets transported on diesel trucks around the country and around the world before it even reaches a gas station. So if you look at that whole process, it's, we've successfully been driving internal combustion engines for over 100 years, but there is a much better solution out now, which actually, if you look at it, is a lot cheaper.
And surely there can't be like an excess amount of, or abundant amount of oil in the earth.
No, it's a limited resource, so we need to move over to electric vehicles anyway.
As I understand it, though, too, the battery that goes into an electric car actually needs to be in that car for a certain number of years before it actually becomes more environmentally friendly than a combustion engine car, because there's so many emissions that go into producing the battery itself that I think it's, depending on how big that battery is, it needs to actually go for at least 5 years or 10 years, depending on the battery size, before it actually supersedes a combustion engine car. So I think that that's something to kind of pay attention to as well when you start hearing companies who want to sort of just switch out the battery, like after 5 years. I'm like, no, that battery needs to stay in the car for a certain period of time before it's actually environmentally friendly and not just kind of greenwashing us with your electric mobility.
I think what we need to realize as well, though, is technology is getting so much more advanced year by year. So the 90% reduction in cost for batteries since 2010, well, what you're actually also seeing is the efficiency in that battery is getting better and better as the years go by. So that battery shelf life will continue to last longer. And if you're charging it through renewable sources like solar panels, which we'll get onto later, then you can really extend that shelf life.
That makes a lot of sense, actually, too, if you're using different kind of types of technology that are environmentally friendly to actually use the car. I'm sure that probably reduces that time frame that I was just talking about.
Yeah.
And there are so many different initiatives as well out there promoting electric mobility. Formula E is one of them. And I actually managed to catch up with the former Formula E champion, Lucas Degrassi, and talk a bit more about electric mobility. This is what he had to say. Hi, Lucas. It's great to have you on the show.
Hi, Louise. Thank you very much for hosting me. It's a pleasure being here.
So much to talk about with you. What was the reason that you became so passionate about electric mobility?
When I was growing up, my dream was to become a Formula One driver. And of course, we didn't have electric anything, right? Apart from maybe elevators and remote control cars. And it as my career went on, and as soon as I got to Formula One, it was clear that to gain efficiency in those type of vehicles, the hybrid solution was the only way forward, because the engines, they reached their very close to the maximum capacity that they can actually perform in terms of efficiency combustion cycle. So then when I was in Formula One, the hybrid started to come on. And basically, to get more efficiency out, you get a bigger hybrid in. And if you extrapolate that into the future, you see that hybrids becoming better, combustion engines becoming smaller, at one point that the mobility goes electric. So in 2012, after a few years in Formula One, I helped to create Formula E. I was the first employee from Alejandro in his new venture, which was to create this Formula One electric. And it was a big journey because in 2012, nobody believed in electric cars at all. And then slowly, all the predictions, all the understanding of the general public started to kick in. And now people understand that actually electric cars are becoming cheaper, better, less maintenance, cheaper to operate, and therefore it is the future of mobility. It's not the future of mobility today for everything, but it will be the future of mobility if we want to be more efficient and want to move ourselves in a cleaner and cheaper way.
Or sustainably, for sure. And did you find the team? Did you kind of go looking for a team, or did a team come to you? You were with Audi initially, weren't you?
Yeah, so I brought Audi into Formula E. So I was with Audi in endurance racing, so long distance, long time races, 24-hour races, Le Mans, and so on. And the car was already a hybrid back then. And then in 2016, they decided to stop the program and focus fully on Formula E. And then I raced with them in Formula E in 2017, 18, 19, and 20. So I raced with them for, in total, something like 10 years with Audi. And yeah, until they stopped that, and then they went to Endeavor in Formula One. But it has been a great journey with them.
And what kind of impact do you think that the championship has on society?
Any motorsport, any championship has serves two purposes. The first one is entertainment, which is for people to see something which they think is exciting and fun, and understand that the electric cars, you know, you can race each other and so on. And the second purpose is the championship serves as a laboratory for the brands. So the manufacturers are inside the championship developing technologies that they will see being implemented in commercial vehicles in the future.
Do you think it helps raise awareness as well to the general public watching about electric mobility and encourages them to actually get on board?
Of course. That's the, let's say, the entertainment and the fun part, which they see a fast car moving around fully electric. They see high-level competition, the acceleration, and they get excited about driving something electric. So the acceptance of the public sometimes is a bigger barrier than the technology itself. And sometimes the technology is already mature, but the general public needs to understand and need to change maybe some habits to embrace that technology. And normally this is harder than actually the development of the technology itself.
Formula E is not the only thing that you are doing when it comes to sustainability, though. I know you're an entrepreneur and involved in lots of different other things. So do you want to share what you're up to?
Well, I've been doing a diverse route for sustainability in many different ways. I've been working with the UN as an ambassador for them. But the main thing that I've been doing is trying to promote pragmatic and commercially viable solutions for sustainability. I think that's the main thing. I'm not an activist. I'm not I don't try to greenwash into solutions that are not feasible or even not causing more value or creating more value into society, that if they are green, if they are more sustainable, we need to move towards a better society, a more sustainable society, but in a pragmatic way. So, for example, I'm creating a new championship called the e-scooter race championship. So, racing these beasts of e-scooters like trottinettes. I've worked in autonomous driving. We have a few world records in autonomous driving with a full electric car. It was a company called RoboRace. I've done some investments from different areas across from additive manufacturing to self-degrading plastic and many others. So I've been always involved in technology because in racing, you see a lot of technology being developed. So in the end, you see more or less where that technology could land in a commercial product in the future. And therefore, you have an advantage of trying to push these ideas. At the same time, of course, making money, but finding viable solutions for the world and for society.
When does the Electric Scooter Championship start?
It's already started. You can check it out, e-scooter race on Instagram and YouTube. And it always, at the moment, it's happening in Dubai at the end of the year. We did it the first one last year. The second one happens this year again. And we bring riders all across the world. It's very interesting to see how exciting and how fast they go with those scooters, over 150 kph.
I have seen some of them actually in the test stages.
You have to come and see one of the races. You're more than invited to come.
Oh, thank you. And what about the Formula E then? How do you feel about the end of this championship this year? Ninth place, I think you ended up, right?
No, I ended up ninth in the last race, but in the championship, I finished 20th. I finished, actually, it was my worst championship ever. It was a very, very hard year, mentally, with motivation, because I knew that the car I was driving was not a very good car. And it was the last year of that car. Now I embark a new journey with the Abt Lola Yamaha coming to Formula E. And I'm actually quite relieved that we can put the last championship behind and start working on a new project that I'm very excited about. And Formula E now enters its 11th season, so 11 years. And to be able to do every single race so far, I think I've done something like 134 races. It's something that I would have never managed. I would have never imagined when we started this project together back in 2012.
That's a lot of stamina that you got there.
It's a lot of work. 130 something races all over the globe, all five continents. It has been a good journey.
So just to summarize, you know, what your hopes for the future are, what do you want to see happen with the automotive industry as a whole?
I think what I want to see is a more democratic, cheaper and better mobility for everybody. I think that's what we need to work for. And if electric or battery powered electric is the way, would be great. I'll be pushing for that. If another technology comes along or a different form of battery comes along or to store energy comes along, I'd be more than happy to support that as well. I think the purpose is, of course, in racing to have fun and to try to see who's the best driver and to use that knowledge to make the industry progress as fast as possible, that everybody in the world can be quicker, safer, better in whenever they want to go, increased of freedom, increased of potential to travel without harming the planet, without compromising with their air quality, with their health. And Formula E has been a great laboratory for that.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with the next season and also have a wonderful rest now this season's over. Enjoy time with family and all of the other projects you've got going on. Actually, it doesn't sound like you're going to rest at all.
Not at all. We are working already on the new season and next week I'm already in Europe again testing. But thank you very much. And again, you're invited to come to any Formula E race and also in the e-scooter race in Dubai end of the year.
Thank you so much. All right, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We'll talk again soon, I'm sure.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Sam, it's so interesting to hear Lucas Degrassi talking about electric mobility and everything that he hopes to see from the future from his position. What are your thoughts on electric sports?
Yeah, first of all, I think it was a very visionary thing for him to do, to spend 2 years in Formula One and then to realize that this new division of Formula Racing was happening and jumped on the bandwagon and ended up winning it in his first year. So that was incredible. Formula E's just grown tremendously. There's now 400 million fans across the world and it's going to continue to grow. So I think he's being a champion of electric vehicles, and I think Formula E is being a champion for other potential sports to take to take aim and start to do their own electric vehicle racing.
Well, he mentioned about the e-scooter championship, and there's electric race boat championship, E1 series. You know, that there's so many coming up now.
Yeah, NASCAR as well. So I was reading the other day that NASCAR interviewed a lot of their fans, and 50% of their fans said they would be willing to buy an electric vehicle if it was to enhance their speed. So they're linking it to racing.
But speed, I mean, they are fast, aren't they, electric cars? Was it? I think they can actually outrun a Formula One car.
So Formula E cars are actually 30% faster, 0 to 60, than a Formula One car. So, yeah, they've already accomplished that.
I love driving my dad's electric car, actually, when I go home and I just...
Watch out for the speed cameras.
No, I mean, in speed, but it's just like that, as you say, 0 to 60.
Right.
When you kind of first get on the freeway, it's like, okay, and we're off.
Yeah. You know?
So why do you think that people have such resilience when it comes to electric mobility?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to charge and range anxiety. And now there's 54,000 level 2 chargers across America. And there's 10,000 direct current or level 3 fast chargers across America. So 64,000 chargers in total, kind of public chargers scattered around. And the figures show that we're going to have 33 million electric vehicles on the road by 2030.
Wow.
So there's a shortage of chargers compared to cars being manufactured. And the US are far behind China. This year, China is going to produce 10.1 million electric vehicles. Europe's going to produce 3.4 million electric vehicles. And we're trailing behind in the US at 1.7 million. We still beat last year at 1.2, but we're still far behind Europe and China. And the problem is, whilst all these cars are hitting the roads, there's not enough infrastructure, which creates range charging anxiety. If someone wants to travel from a different state, they're worried about where they're going to charge their car.
Do you think that is because we are just such a larger country in some ways, and you do just travel a lot further to get from A to B?
Yeah. Yeah. My goal, or our goal with EV Charge Me, is we want someone to be driving from Miami to Seattle an electric vehicle and have no issues about charging their car. We want to get rid of that range anxiety so everyone can have an electric vehicle and enjoy it.
And that range anxiety is definitely there. I mean, even across Europe and other places too. I don't know how many years ago it was, but my parents took an electric car, not their current one, but the one they had previously, which didn't have the same range on it. They took it down to the south of France to visit some friends. And they ended up ended up about 10 hours longer than they'd planned because of all of the charging and having to do it with like an actual 3-pin plug along the way.
Yeah.
And they ended up getting there at like 5 in the morning.
Yeah.
They should have just stopped and got a hotel and came the next day, but they didn't.
Well, the first issue is that range and charging anxiety I told you about. Mm. It gets a little worse when there actually is a charging station available.
And it doesn't work.
And it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So in places like Chicago and New York, they've been known to freeze during the winter. And in places, sadly, like California, they've been vandalized and some even set on fire and they break. And so the break-even point from a business standpoint for these level 2 charging stations are anywhere between 15 to 25 years.
Oh, wow.
It's so uneconomical.
And of course, the app that you go to doesn't tell you that it's broken. So
right.
You just go there thinking, oh, there's one just around the corner. Let me go. And then you can't use it.
Right.
Maybe only with 2% left on your car or something.
Right.
Yeah. So tell me a bit more about your solution then.
Well, what EV Charge Me wants to solve is this crisis. So we want to have a charging station on every block in America. It's just going to cost far too much. The average public charging station costs the company $25,000 to put in place, and I told you about that 15 to 25 year break-even point. Well, if we encourage homeowners to open up their charging station to allow other people to charge in their front driveway, now we're bringing in a revenue income for those people, for those households, and we're also encouraging them to perhaps consider or reconsider buying solar, because now they can generate their electrons from the sun. And they can sell those electrons by charging other people's vehicles rather than selling it back to the grid at a very heavy discount.
Wow. And of course, even if you already have solar, sometimes you have solar energy that you can't use within a day. And so you just gets lost because right. certain systems, you know, don't send it back to the grid. And so you'd, as you say, be able to actually utilize that energy that we're getting from the sun elsewhere. Yeah. Where are you at with the developments?
We have our prototype out. We should have our final product out by the end of the year. We're essentially creating a smart box, and the smart box is going to sit next to your EV charger, and it will prevent unauthorized charging because I'm seeing a lot of reports from London to different parts of America and other parts of Europe where strangers are going to your front driveway and they're literally charging their car. And then the person's coming out with their phone, filming them, saying, "What are you doing?" And they're saying, "I'm just charging my car." And they're like, this is not your charging station, and B, you're on private property. So we're going to eradicate that by creating a smart box, which is going to be very, very small and slick, and it's going to be next to your EV charger, and the charging gun is going to go inside that smart box. And then you simply scan the smart box, it opens up, you grab the nozzle, the charging gun, you charge your car, and the moment you put it back and close it, payment's done. It'll just seamlessly leave your account and go to the host. It's going to be completely seamless. And
so you just have to sign up for it like you would an Airbnb, or is it a subscription, or how does
So we're going to have an app, and the app essentially, so when you buy the hardware, the smart box, you're essentially on the app. And so people will be able to see your location, and they will charge their vehicle. And I like the way you brought it back to Airbnb, because we're initially going to be going to Airbnb and VRBO hosts. Because what's really interesting about the data we've been seeing is searches from guests for potential places they're looking to stay for EV chargers is rising by 80% every year on year. So there's more and more people looking for EV capabilities at people's homes. And on the other sides of the equation, on the coin, is Airbnb hosts are complaining about unauthorized charging.
Okay.
So we're trying to solve that by allowing Airbnb hosts to make additional revenue and solving the problem on the other side where you lose that range anxiety and you can drive your car anywhere.
Fantastic. I did actually do that one time and booked an Airbnb, but I had to sort of check, do you have a charging point? And whilst they didn't have an electric charging point, they said that they had a three-pin plug. I was in England,
yeah.
in their shed, so I could access it with the cord. So I had to charge the car with a three-pin plug overnight. And if anybody, you know, uses electric cars and knows about
sure.
this, that takes a long time.
2% was it?
Yeah. So I had enough to get home the next
Good.
Day. That was the main thing. But it can be a little hairy.
Yeah.
You just don't
yeah.
know. You know, and it's that fear and anxiety of not being able to charge again that prevents people actually taking their electric cars too far.
Yeah.
So where did the idea actually first come from? Was there a situation, or was it just sort of a business idea?
I'd love to tell you it came from the clouds, but actually my co-founder, John, had a guest that stayed around his house. They were originally watching the football, American football, and he asked whether he can charge his car. And that's where the light bulb moment came from.
Amazing. And is the idea patented?
We have a patent pending on the smart box.
Okay, amazing. And how do you see sort of the rollout in the next year? I know you said you're hoping to launch later into this year.
Yeah, we're going to take things, methodically, nice and slow. You know, we're going to go to Airbnb, VRBO hosts. We are talking to some very large solar companies across America right now. They're very excited about what we're doing because there's 4.2 million homes in the US with solar today. Nearly half of those homes are in California. So that's amazing. But we still have 87 million homes that are capable of getting solar that have not got solar yet. So for these solar companies, they want to push more solar and, of course, make America green again and encourage more people to buy solar panels. So they're looking to partner with us as well. So end of this year, we'll have our products. By the end of next year, we'll be starting to roll out in potentially California will be our next state after Colorado.
So that will be kind of when people can start getting the smart boxes and installed in their home.
Oh, people will be able to get the smart box, hopefully by the end of this year.
Amazing. And how do you think then that EV Charge Me is going to change the electric mobility industry as a whole?
You know, we just want to solve the biggest problem, or the reason why one in two Americans do not buy an electric vehicle when they considered buying one. Mm-hmm. And that is range and charging anxiety. There is a new one coming, which we spoke about reliability of whether a charging station actually works. So if we can solve those issues, we really do believe that we can increase EV sales in this country. Even though we're not an EV manufacturing company, we believe that we can increase solar sales in this country, even though we don't produce solar. And as a byproduct of that, we really do believe that we can make a huge difference to reduce fossil fuel dependency and to reduce carbon dioxide in the air and just really make this country livable for our kids and our grandkids.
Yeah, it's so interesting when you say it so simply like that, like livable, because right now we are just living in a very toxic environment.
It's scary. I've got goosebumps right now, but it's pretty scary because I live in a beautiful town called Evergreen in 25 minutes west of Denver. And I foolishly said yes to the Apple weather app. And now I keep getting notifications every day saying there's bad air. And so I wish I didn't sign up for it, so I didn't realize how bad the air was.
In
Evergreen, we're 2,000 feet higher than Denver. And I thought it would be clean air. So this is a serious, serious issue.
Oh, yeah, you think that'd be mountain air up
there.
Yeah,
exactly. And, we're getting to the point where we could be fast so far down the rabbit hole, there's no turning back. And we strongly believe that we can make a difference in being the catalyst or the spark plug for more EV and solar adoption in this country.
I think when you see the pandemic and, as you mentioned before, the reduction in air pollution during that particular time, it really is encouraging because people notice the difference. They saw the figures. And so it does make people just open their eyes a little bit more to actually how they can make a difference and make better choices.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm really happy for everything that you're doing. And I wish you the best of luck with the rest of this year and the journey with EV Charge Me. And I'm going to have to get myself a box, please.
Yes.
Not that I've got really a spot to charge very easily. Like, my car would be in the way. What would you do then? Like, if your car's in the way?
So you can set the hours. The host can set the hours that people can drive into their driveway.
Okay. So when you're at work or something.
Correct. Yeah. So if people are working out of their home from a certain period of time, then obviously they'll open up their driveway for that period of time, and then they can bring in some additional revenue and charge someone's car.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Solution for everything. I love it. So where can people find out more about what you're doing?
You can just go to our website, evchargeme.com. Okay. And you can sign up on the wait list for a smart box, and we are currently raising still. So if someone's interested listening out there, then they can send in an inquiry for that too.
Or do you have any social media accounts?
We're not really on social media that much at the moment. We've been so busy building the company.
That's okay. It'll come. Yeah. And probably a better time spent, I'm sure, than social media.
It's like getting the app and getting the hardware out has been the main thing. So.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, we have an Instagram account, and we'll post some stuff on our account for you.
I appreciate that.
And Instagram's, of course, where you can go as well to find out about the many giveaways that we've got with the show. So just head over to @becurious_podcast if you want to enter any of those. And, of course, to check out many of the other episodes that we have on the podcast. Thank you so much, Sam. It's been such a pleasure chatting to you today. Thank you for being here and sharing everything that you're doing. I'm Louise Houghton, and until next time, guys, stay curious.